It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports, The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. This is, of course, the best morning of the year. Because we all, although we did lose daylight savings, we did all earn an extra hour of welcome sleep overnight. And I, for one, very much enjoyed the added hour of slumber. And by the way, the correct time is 7:04 Eastern Standard Time. Okay, today is, of course, the running of the New York City Marathon, which is always a big day for the 50,000-plus runners who are lining up right now and getting ready to run 26.2 miles throughout the five boroughs. And has become a welcome tradition on the Sports Edge on Marathon Sunday. I like to talk about the joy and benefits of running, not just for kids and youngsters who find the way to running, but, of course, for sports parents and coaches, And quite frankly, for all of us, no matter our age, who have embraced running as a lifelong passion. And for the last 11 years, I've asked Joel Pasternak to come on the show to talk about the art and science of running. And of course, Joel joins me again this morning. And just a little background on Joel. At age 72, he's now in his 57th year of running. It all started when he was a sophomore in 1965 on the Clifton, New Jersey High School cross country team. And I guess he kept a notepad right from the start of his career, and he's been keeping track of all his runs and mileage. And as of this week, Joel has accumulated 130,900 miles over the years. And he has done so through, he's had six right knee surgeries, including a full knee replacement just a few years ago. But let me come back to that mileage number, because that's to sink in. Keep in mind that it's about 25,000 miles around the circumference of the Earth. So in effect, Joel has run the equivalent of running around the globe more than five times in his lifetime. And to me, that's pretty impressive. He's finished 16 marathons. His best was 2:25:03 in 1974 at the Boston Marathon, where he placed 28th. And in 73, he placed second to two-time New York City Marathon winner Tom Fleming with a time of 2:25:08. And in 76, New York City had its first five-borough marathon, and Joel placed 25th with 2:27:37. Now, Coach Joel has been advising runners since the 70s. He has private clients of all ages, high school, colleges, numerous running clubs, town recreation track programs. You can reach him at his email, which is very simple. It's Joel Run, one word, J-O-E-L, run at AOL.com, or go to his website, which is Joel, J-O-E-L, hyphen, run.com. And, of course, we'll take your questions and calls for Coach Joel at 877-337-6666. And on that note, Joel, good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be on. Looking forward to this day, but I feel very bad for all this 50,000 runners who have been training 3 to 4 months. And it's just about out of the question of them getting what's called a PB, personal best, or a PR, a personal record. With these temperatures, it's going to be very rough out there.
Well, let's get into that right away, because obviously the concern about today's race is the warm weather, with temperatures heading into the 70s and humidity being high as well. You just mentioned, of course, that for a lot of runners, this is not ideal situation. And it's kind of curious because I think it's fair to say that a lot of sports fans, you know, like the fact that it's sunny and warm in the 70s in November in the New York area. But for a runner, this is not good. And I have to ask you, as a veteran long-distance runner yourself, how did you prepare for these kind of warm days when competing?
Well, I've run marathons going into the spring or early fall, and fortunately, my body and the training I did, like for that 74 Boston, which was very warm and in the 70s, and it started at noontime, I was lucky to hold on, and with the mileage I was getting in of 100 miles a week, 10 years in a row, almost 50,000 miles over 10 years between 1970 and 79, I was able to hold up pretty well. But, you know, other runners had to, after the race, go to the medical tent and get IVs. And just out of knowledge to your fans and yourself, our body has brown fat and white fat. And as it starts getting cooler out, and we start shivering, our body starts manufacturing more brown fat.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, because we've had a very mild fall, we still have a lot of white fat and not a lot of brown fat. So that plays into the runner's positive way of running today. So the body will be more ready for this warmer temperature than it will be if all of a sudden it dropped to the 30s today in the race, and they wouldn't have a lot of brown fat, and they would get quite cold and shiver. So that's in their favor. They're also setting up medical tents after the 3 miles, every mile. So there will be an advantage if anybody gets in trouble. There will be Gatorade. There will be goos that runners take while they're running to help them. I'm always suggesting to my runners, you got to wear light-colored clothing. Anyone who goes out there with a dark-colored shirt is just asking for trouble because the sun is attracted to the darker colors. It's going to raise their heart rate up, make their heart work harder, and they're going to fatigue a lot sooner.
Let me ask you, Joel, about the tradition the night before of eating a big pasta or carbohydrate dinner. Is that still done? Does that make sense in these kind of conditions? Do the runners do that still?
Yes, they still do. Pasta dinners, a lot of bread. Some of them are still into, but not as many, what's called carbohydrate loading. At the beginning of the week, all they will eat will be protein. They won't have any carbohydrates at all for like 4 days.
Yeah.
And they'll keep training. You know, they'll be tapering, doing less running, but they're going to start feeling fatigued and tired because all they're eating is protein. And then all of a sudden, they'll ingest their body with all carbohydrates from now through till this morning.
Yeah.
It's not done as much, and I don't believe in it. I don't think you should shock your body as much, but the pasta and the bread and having, the first part of the run is going off for the wheelchair runners, men at 8 o'clock and female 8 or 2,
mm-hmm.
pro men at 8:40 and the pro men at 9:05. So, you know, you're up 6 o'clock, you have your toast, your jelly, and you hydrate well. And I always tell my runners, check your urine. If it's dark colored, make sure you get more fluids in you because you're not hydrated enough. Very important.
Well, let's get into that, and because obviously hydration is what we're all talking about here, because obviously you're going to go to the race. People are going to be, it's going to be perspiring right from the start. It's not cool. It's warm and muggy out. What do you advise your runners about hydrating, either, first of all, before the race, and then during the race? And the question I would have is, well, I mean, how do they know how much to bring in, how many fluids they should bring or intake before they start the race?
Well, each individual person, depending on their height and their weight, would take in a certain amount, and there's a whole formula for that. But when I went, and before the race, I would bring drinks with me. You don't want to overhydrate.
Right.
You don't want to oversaturate your body. And I made sure that I wore a hat that had perforations in the hat, so I could always pour water over my head, and I soaked my hat before I started the race.
Mm-hmm.
I also wore sunscreen. Very important to wear sunscreen to help block some of the rays of the sun and help you be more adaptable to the heat. And always make sure, if even you're not thirsty, to take a drink at every water stop. A lot of people, which I never did back in the day, would wear hydration belts around their waist and carry their fluids with them. But I didn't like wearing something around my waist, and back then we didn't have that.
What about during the race itself? Okay, so now you're into it, you're running along, and you know it's hot, you're off to a good start, you have taken the various precautions before the race in terms of bringing some fluids, you've drank those. But now during the course of the race, I mean, at what point does a runner know that he or she should, you know, basically grab something from on the sidelines of the race to get some water in them or some Gatorade? What are the kind of warning signs that you need to get some more fluid into you?
Well, because of the official marathon and wanting to keep it all in the way of restrictions, even though there will be people along the way giving out drinks, there are going to be mist stations where people can run through mist stations.
Yep.
Every 3 miles. But I would always and tell my runners that every 5K to take something. And if you're not thirsty, which, you know, in these temperatures, you should be thirsty. It would be very unusual that you're not thirsty. And also to always throw something over your head. And I've found over the years, your wrists are a very important part of keeping cool. So you throw water on your wrist.
No, that's curious. Yeah. Why would you say that? I mean, why are the wrists so important to keeping cool?
I've read along the way over the years that the wrists are a part of the body that helps keeping down your temperature. Your heart rate can be gotten through the wrists through your running watch, and it's an area they suggest to help keep your body temperature down. And also, you want to be very aware to the runners out there that if you notice that you're sweating, you have to be very careful because then you could be getting into a heat stroke.
Right, right.
And it's very important if you notice that you're not sweating anymore. That's a big concern to be careful of. The sweating, of course, is very important because that is your air conditioning that's keeping your body temperature down during the race.
Okay, and it's, I guess the biggest concern I would think is that during the course of the 26 miles, if a runner decides, okay, I want to be very super cautious and keeps ingesting fluids, can they overdo it? I mean, can they have too much in the system?
Yes. Yep, there's a term called where you can over saturate your body with water and you can get yourself in trouble. So you have to be very careful about that. Listen to your body. Very important that I told my runners and for your listeners is you've got to, when you go into this race, tell yourself, I'm going to be running 15 to 45 seconds slower a mile than my goal pace. So say, for instance, a runner wants to average 9-minute miles and they've got their heart set on breaking 4 hours. Well, it's going to be pretty tough today if that's their goal. And you shouldn't start out with the sub-4-hour group. Maybe start out with the 4-hour and 10-minute group. And then if you happen to get to the 15-mile mark and you know now, well, I've gotten, you know, more than halfway and 11 miles to go, maybe I'll start picking it up a little bit. I'm feeling pretty good. So you have to weigh how you're feeling along the way.
We're talking with Joel Pasternak. Obviously, we're talking about long-distance running and the New York City Marathon. Joel's just reviewed a bunch of very important tips for anybody who's running like today when it's hot and sunny and how you prepare yourself for these kind of weather conditions, which obviously will have a real impact on your performance. 877-337-6666, that is our number. Joel, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go right to our phone calls. I know Dr. Rob Fried is going to try and call in as well. He's hopefully going to run today in the marathon. I'm eager to hear what he has to say about his situation. Again, 877-337-6666.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking about everything related to running this morning with Coach Joel Pasternak. And by the way, the correct time is 7:22 Eastern Standard Time. And let's go to our calls as promised at 877-337-6666. And let's start with Dr. Rob Fried, who, like Joel, is a veteran of running various marathons. And I believe, Rob, I believe he's down in Staten Island, down the Verrazano Narrows.
Rob, is that- it is a wild scene. I'm on my watch, so I don't run with a phone. I do have my Apple Watch, so that's how we're communicating.
Yep.
It's just unbelievable. I heard Joel. Good morning to you, and thank you for all the tips that we talked about during the week. And everybody listening, this is going to be a great spectator day. For us, it's going to be a little rough. And Joel, by the way, listening, people, he's phenomenal. I've worked with Joel. Rick, I love you. The scene here is unbelievable. I'm actually looking at the Verrazano Bridge right now. It is warm. It's going to be a rough day for us, but, hey, it's my 40th year. I did my first one in 1982,
yep.
And the scene here is incredible. I was up at 4 o'clock. I did get some good sleep, thankfully. I went to bed real early. I'm hydrated. I'm ready to go. It's a kind of a celebration for me, being that 40 years ago in 1982, I did first one. I've not been continuous, but I heard your opening, Joel and Rick. Great questions. It's going to be an awesome day. I'm excited. What? I'm nervous, to tell you, to be honest, but it's just an unreal scene here, and I hope everybody watches it on TV, and anybody who's running or going to be out there, know people who are running, just enjoy spectating, and I will talk to you during the week, guys. Have a great show. I don't want to take up any more.
Well, Rob,
it is a wild the Verrazano Bridge, and I will talk to you during the week, guys.
Before you go, Rob, what time do you take off? What time is your group?
I get off at 9:10.
Okay, so you got some time still. All right. Well, thank you for chiming in. Obviously, as we just heard, this is absolutely good luck to you, to Rob. It's it is his 40th anniversary of running this marathon, and he's excited about it. And it's going to be an interesting day to be sure. I'm glad he's out there and ready to rock and roll. And it sounds, Joel, like he's in pretty good spirits. You know,
very good spirits. I just hope that through our conversation and him realizing the temperatures, he backs off on his goals and be smart about it.
Yeah, I agree. He is. You know, he's got a medical background, so he's pretty much in tune with the concerns that he might run into, as many of the runners might run into with the heat and humidity. Let's continue with our phone calls. Let's go to Gary over in New Jersey. Gary, good morning. You're next up on the fan.
Good morning. Good morning. Nobody knows more about running than Joel Pasternak. Nobody.
I agree.
He's the best. Really a privilege to be able to talk to him. A couple of questions for you, Joel, that I always wanted to ask you.
Sure, Gary.
What do you think about, you know, not just the running, but off the track running, about stretching and about weightlifting for runners? And can you also talk about, and people should know this, that, you know, he's too humble to talk about it, but when you look at this at New Jersey and you look at the champions, you know, the girls, the boys champions, most of them or a lot of them are coached by Coach Joel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He brings in a lot of champions. I won't say who because I don't think they want their names mentioned. But so many of these New Jersey
thanks, champions Gary.
By Joel. Anyway, what do you think about weightlifting and about stretching and? Can you talk a little bit about the difference of training girls versus boys?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a very big proponent of runners stretching before they run. I know over the years, people have always wanted athletes to jog first for their warm-up, but I keep all my runners and myself stretching first because I feel if you start jogging first, and warming yourself up that way, you're not running economically in your normal stride. And you can get hurt that way in the first half mile of going out without stretching. As we get older, and even for the young kids, I think it's good to weightlift to keep your body toned. That's very important also. When it comes to girls and boys, that's a great question because I'm seeing too many girls that are being coached, and their coaches are letting them get anorexic. And that's very bad. They think, oh, the lighter they are, the stronger they're going to be. So you've got to be very careful with the girls that they don't get too light and too skinny. And I enjoy the girls more than the boys. They seem to work a lot harder than the boys. Boys take for granted their talent, where girls want to work a lot harder.
Interesting stuff. Hey, Gary, thank you for the call this morning.
Thanks, Gary.
Joel, let's go down that pathway, because I know that you had mentioned to me when I spoke to you earlier in the week that there's a concern, and this may relate to boys and girls, especially when they're in middle school or high school and college, that they can overtrain, meaning that as we hear in other sports of repetitive use injury, where a kid is doing the same sport, you know, 12 months of the year, same thing can happen in terms of getting injured with runners, that they can overtrain, that you would actually almost prefer, and again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but make sure the kids do not just specialize in running all year round. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I agree 100% with you that I've seen too many kids over the years with the recreation groups whose fathers and mothers got very excited how well their kids were doing, pushed them too much too soon, and run in high school. Then the kids who have coaches in high school who say, I'm going to show this state in New Jersey or in New York or wherever, I'm going to show them how great a coach I am and bring this kid to the best level. And then the kids are burned out, and then they don't go and do it into college. So, I don't like the overtraining. I like the break. I've had kids who play basketball between cross country and outdoor track. I've had kids come out for cross country and then do basketball and come out for outdoor track. So I really think a kid can reach their potential by doing more sports. And a good example of it is these phenomenal football players who started out with track and football, ended up playing college football, made it to the Olympics, and also made it to the NFL. So if one thing I want to point out to you and your listeners, which is a great study I found, is that in 2018, they surveyed 15,000 college athletes who, during that year, hadn't participated in cross country or track. Okay, they participated in other sports, but not any cross country or track. 65% responded that in high school they competed in those two sports. So that's how important it is to be involved in other sports to get ready for your sport that you really want to focus on.
And to that end, you know, people often, and all sorts of surveys every year from the National Federation of High Schools, and they say, well, what is the most popular sport with high school students? And people think, well, maybe it's basketball or football or whatever, soccer. No, year after year, it's track and field.
Yeah.
By far and away, they track and field in high school has more participants than any other sport that's out there. It's not well publicized, perhaps.
No.
But to your point, Joel, you know, kids like to run. And let me come back for a second to you made about the with girls in particular and the concerns of anorexia, because there are unfortunately coaches, maybe even parents, who sort of figure, well, my kid has some talent as a 14 or a 16-year-old as a long-distance runner, but clearly if she were to keep her weight down or lose even more weight, that would probably empower her to be even faster. Talk about that myth and how dangerous that is.
It's very dangerous because it leads to, in girls, medical problems. In boys, it leads to serious injury problems with their growth.
Yep.
And, I mean, I've been appalled, and I've coaches that have, during girls' soccer, boys' cross-country or track, making these kids not take any type of fluids because they want to make them tougher and get acclimated to the heat.
Yeah.
And not pointing out, because I've seen numerous girls paper thin, that their coaches should be talking to them and pointing out to the parents that this isn't healthy for them. And also parents that don't know that well who should get a private coach or their high school coaches talk to them, because I've never seen all my years of a parent coaching their child to being successful. They burn them out, or the relationship between parent and child ends up in problems.
Yeah, it's a very slippery slope, to be sure, not just obviously with long-distance running, but all sports. But, you know, it's something that I'm glad we're talking about today, because, as I said, we've heard headlines over the last few years, because let's be honest, you know, when kids grow through adolescence and puberty, their body shape and size when they're, you know, 15, that may change dramatically by the time they're 18 or 20. And if they're runners, that could have, the way they just grow naturally, could have a real impact on their performances as runners. And I think that, you know, parents see that the kid is talented at 14 or 15 and then try to figure out a way to influence the kid's diet or regimen so that they can maintain a very, very thin body. And that's not always the best thing. It's just not going to happen, because the kid's going to grow and grow the way that they're, according to their DNA.
Yeah, very bad. And I know you've discussed on your program a girl from New York State, Caitlin Tui, who coaches brought her along very well in high school, got her scholarship to North Carolina State. And I just watched her the other day running cross country. And she's built like a forward on a basketball team. And she's doing great, healthy as can be. But then there's our New York girl, Mary Kane, who was a superstar in high school, and got involved with the Oregon Nike group, and she no longer runs, and hopefully she's going to come back and do better and be a lot more healthier.
Yeah, those are probably the two prime examples that come to mind. Caitlin Tui, of course, is just doing, as you say, terrifically well for NC State, and is obviously has won a lot of major races recently. She's a champion in the making. But as you said, she's not paper thin. She comes, as I recall, her mom and dad were both pretty good, outstanding long distance runners as well.
Yes, they were.
So they obviously, their own familiarity with proper training and how to go about long distance running the right way. With Mary Kane, that's a sad story. She was a superstar out of Bronxville in New York, and then she got involved with the Nike program, and again, it just things went south in a hurry. So these are important issues that not just obviously coaches have to be aware of, as you said, Joel, but obviously the parents as well, because your kid is going to, you know, grow and mature and go through all different types of body or growth spurts as their body grows. It's as simple as that. Yeah. Anyhow, look, I got to take a time out. I have a lot more questions for you, Joel. I know our time is limited today, but I do want to come back to you. And friends, we'll take your calls, of course, at 877-337-6666. We're talking with Coach Joel Pasternak. Come back to me after this break. Friends, you can always follow me on Twitter at AskCoachWolf, and you can go to my website and track me down there at AskCoachWolf.com. I have to acknowledge, of course, that the World Series is over. Congratulations to the Houston Astros, and especially to Dusty Baker, who at age 73 finally won his first World Series. By all accounts, Dusty is a great guy, and obviously we're all, at least I am, very, very pleased for him. You know, I got to tell you, I always find it a bit sad when the baseball season comes to an end and the daylight gets shorter. I mean, today, of course, it'll be dark by around 5 o'clock. But next year, let's be honest, baseball is going to change at the big league level, which I think is going to be good. No more defensive shifts. There'll be pitch clocks to make sure pitchers, you know, throw pitches to the batters in a timely fashion. But honestly, besides the big league level, the game definitely has to change at the youth level. And I got to tell you, I've talked about this in the show over the course of the spring and summer. I urge you to check out the website SaveTheGameUs.com. If you're concerned, like I am, at the game of baseball could really just quickly disappear from the youth level. Kids just don't play baseball like they used to. So check out this website. It's pretty cool. I think you'll be impressed with the numbers and stats that exist on it. SaveTheGameUs.com. Okay, we're talking, of course, this morning with running coach Joel Pasternak. And as you heard, he's got tremendous tips and advice for all runners of all ages. You can go to his website at joel-run.com, or his email is joelrun@aol.com. I got to ask you this, Joel. When you deal with runners, or when a runner comes to you, whether they're high school, college, older, and you begin to evaluate or analyze how they run, I'm sure they come with questions for you. They obviously want to improve their performance. But how do you actually go about the analysis of watching how they run and their stride, or the way their body goes through their motions? How do you actually go through that?
First thing, before I even get to that point,
is
I make sure they have the proper sneakers, that they're fitted properly.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to say 90% of the people that want to run, they don't tie their sneakers properly. I talk about this every year.
Yes, you do. I mean, people are going to say, come on now, coach. I mean, signed sneakers, how tough can that be? So let's get into this. What are the most popular brands for running shoes are like Brooks and Asics and Nike, New Balance? What are your thoughts about, and I realize you don't endorse any of these brands, but what do you feel the best brands people should be looking at to buy running shoes?
Well, you should go to a store, you know, a Roadrunner, Sports, a Fleet Feet, someone who has people there at the store that know how to fit you.
Yep.
They'll know if you have a narrow foot, which Nike fits well and Asics fits well.
Uh-huh.
Medium width foot, New Balance, Brooks is very good. New Balance comes in width, so if you're very narrow, you can be a B width or a double A for a woman, or if you're very wide, and depending on your weight, a triple or 40. So that's important to get the right sneakers. And I also suggest that, because most runners do it after work and in the evening, you get your sneakers fitted later in the day because your foot's going to be a little more swollen from being on it. You fit a new pair of sneakers at 9 o'clock in the morning, your foot's not going to be the same size in terms of width and little swelling as it will be later in the day when you normally will run.
Good point.
That's a good time that you should go get these sneakers.
Now, before we get to tying shoelaces, I know you're a big fan of Superfeet, the inner soles that runners can put into their shoes.
Yes.
Are you still bullish on Superfeet?
Yes, I am. I'm glad you brought that up, because for years and years, I've been very unhappy with the prices of the sneakers, and then they give you $1.50 insole for your arch and the support of your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's giving you, I mean, some people can get away with it because they're very efficient and mechanical-wise, the way their form is. But a lot of people, I feel, need these super feet, at least to try. I mean, I've had recently, over the last few years, asked people to try them, and they don't like them. So they stick with what they have, but I just tell them to be careful along the way of watching the wear on your sneaker. I tell people to keep track of how many miles they put on their sneakers, and if possible, have two pairs of sneakers to keep rotating on and off.
Okay, let's get into that for a second, because I realize everybody's different size, different shapes, but what would you say overall, how long should a pair of running shoes, sneakers, how long should that last in terms of miles or months, whatever?
People who have come to me and told me they've gotten 800 miles on a pair of sneakers, which I can't believe.
Yeah, that's a lot of miles.
And sneaker companies aren't going to make it that long enough, long to last, because they want to keep selling them. So I myself, 250 to 300 miles, the way I run, and my mechanics, I wear out one side faster than the other because of my leg, discrepancy. And that's something I'll watch when I, see a person run around the track. I watch their form, their arms, their gait is very important to watch. So, there's a lot that goes into it, But I don't want to spend a lot of time with them, because first I want to get them in shape and get them comfortable to running and improve their running and not give them a lot of stuff all at once to have to learn.
No, I get that. But clearly, they come to you, obviously, because they want to improve their performance, so their times, whatever.
Yes.
But you're going to, and obviously you want to build a rapport with them so they understand, you know, where you're coming from. Tell me, what are the major questions or the common questions you get from, let's start with high school athletes, cross-country runners. What are the basic, more common questions they have for you when they come to you for your insights and expertise?
Well, what will it take? I have a goal, like a boy on my high school team next spring wants to run a certain time. What will it take, coach, for me to run a better time for my half mile and my mile?
Mm-hmm.
Or what will it take for a kid that I have in recreation? He ran a minute 30 seconds for a 400 meters. Coach, what will I take to do that? Or, coach, I jumped a long jump of 12 feet. What will it take for me to go longer? I want to be a part of a relay team. What will it take for me to get on the relay team? But I just want to quickly go back to your point you brought up about the numbers of people participating in cross-country and track.
Yeah.
And the important point of that I bring up to my groups that I spend a lot of time with is that any athlete can partake and they will not get cut. Everybody participates on a cross-country and track team, which baseball, you only have 9 that can go play.
Sure.
Basketball, only 5. Football, you're 10, 11 players playing. So that is why we see such large numbers in these rec groups of 80 to 100 kids from first grade to eighth grade coming out and partaking in the sport because they don't want to sit the bench.
No, I think that's a good point. I mean, you're obviously giving kids a chance to run. You in terms of a sport being based on meritocracy, I mean, track and field running, well, here's how it works, folks. Whoever is, the kids are the fastest are the ones who are going to win. And so there's nothing to do with subjective evaluation or favoritism or coach's
right.
favorite. No, if you are the fastest, you will win. You will succeed. And if you want to get faster, then they're obviously, you know, the time has come to listen to your coach. You know, find somebody like Joel Pasternak who can help you get better and really evaluate your entire scope. And Joel, before I forget, let's go back to tying, the proper way to tie shoelaces for your running shoes. That's important.
Yeah. Okay, so the sneaker with all its holes, as you come up the sneaker, you start tying the sneaker from the bottom up. Okay, you pull on the laces till you get the laces fairly close. If you get the laces too close to where the shoe is right next to each other,
yeah.
you bought a shoe that you were sold to you that is too narrow for you. Your foot should never be that close together. Got to have an inch or so between each side.
Okay.
As you get up to the top of the sneaker, there are two holes at the top of the sneaker. You want to tie the last hole of the sneaker. Okay? And you want to pull that up nice and snug, but you don't want to pull it too tight because you don't want to irritate the sensitive nerves in your foot. Okay? Once you tie the sneaker, and you should always double knot it because I've had people running and the knot comes undone because they only do a single knot, you then double check to see if you can take your sneaker off the back of your heel, that means you haven't tied your sneaker tight enough. And the importance because of that is there's a piece of cardboard that all the shoe companies put in the heel counter of the sneaker
yes.
that they laminate with a plastic substance that will help absorb the shock that once your heel hits the ground and it goes through all the fancy material that they put in the 2 or 3 layers and it goes into the heel counter, it's then absorbed more before it goes to your Achilles tendon and up through your calf and affecting the shins. And what we discussed is the knee is the number one injury that athletes will get in all sports.
Right, right. The shins, shin splints, as they're commonly known. So you're saying, in effect, that when you get the brand new pair of running shoes or sneakers and you start to lace them up, a lot of people, for whatever reason, say, well, you know, there's an extra hole here towards, as I finish lacing my shoe, there's an extra couple of holes on either side of the sneaker. I'm just going to bypass that. I don't want to get do that. But you're saying, no, that's actually pretty important. That there's a real reason for those holes to be there, and you need to lace them up and do it properly. And to make sure, of course, you said that the you tie the sneaker pretty tightly so that they don't fall off, and they don't have, you got to double knot them, so again they don't come loose while you're running.
Those last two holes, when you pull on them, will bring that heel counter, which when you first buy a new shoe, it's still very stiff, so you want to get that heel counter in. And I make all my runners, before they go out for a run or a workout, I say to them, okay, can you take your sneakers off? But when I see them after a practice and they're getting ready to leave practice and they take their sneakers off to put on their moccasins and other shoes, they're breaking down that heel counter a lot faster. They just paid $150, $200 for their sneakers, and they're breaking down the heel counter by taking the sneaker off without untying it. It's just too lazy to untie it.
It just seems like common sense, but again, there are, as you said, a lot of people just don't pay attention to that. They don't think it's that important or that key to their success. Oh. All right, let's get back to more calls. Let's go over to Queens. Danny is standing by. Danny, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Hi, Danny.
Good morning, guys. Listen, Joel, some resume. Thank you. I'm a running guy. I wish I could just find you right now. We could stay and watch a marathon all day together and just keep talking running. I'll be talking running for hours. I enjoy it. Rick, thank you again. As always, you put on a great show, and I'm very grateful.
Thanks, Danny.
I finished my morning run. I'm about a mile away from the Verrazano.
Oh, cool.
And it's a great morning for a run when you get out early, but it is already humid, and I feel bad for my brother and sister's runners that are out there today. And you said one thing before, Joel, when Rick was asking you questions about what people should do. I think you referenced, and I'm just going to paraphrase, something in sum and substance to every runner is different, and you got to just, it's trial and error kind of thing to figure out what works for you.
Correct. Very important. Some runners need more distance. They're lacking their slow twitch fibers, which is going to help. The more slow twitch you have, you're going to have more endurance. Some runners lack the fast twitch fibers, which you can't change. You're basically born with a certain percentage, but as long as you use them, Danny, you're going to keep your speed going, and keep it up and not slowing down. Have you ran New York City, Danny?
I've done it a bunch of times. It's a great race. I don't have your resume. My goal was to qualify for Boston, and I could never get below that 3:30 mark. But I have no regrets. I was very very happy. Many, many memories along the course of the race. I'm a little bit older now, not your age, but too old to run those kind of miles anymore. 2.5 today, and I'm grateful I was able to do the 2.5 miles
good
today.
Good for you. Well, keep up the running and keep it alive.
Rick, thanks again, Rick. You're great, bro. You really are. Great show each and every week.
Thank you very much, Danny. Thank you for the kind words and for checking in. And Joel, this is a sort of a follow-up to Danny's note, and the fact that it's just something unusual about people who are involved in running that obviously we know it is a lifelong sport. There are sports like tennis or golf or swimming that an athlete can do for decades, and that's great. But running, it's just a different kind of there's a certain kind of respect, friendships, rapport, whatever you want to call it, that runners have for each other. They're not as openly, let's say, they're competitive. They want to win. We know that. But they're not as, let's say, antagonistic towards their fellow competitors. There's more of a brotherhood here or a sisterhood that they really have a respect for everybody who lines up for the starting gun to run. You obviously know this. You've been doing this for a long time. It's pretty unique, isn't it?
Very unique. We talked about it on our phone call during the week. When football players are done with their game, hi, hello, they go their other ways. But you were at a cross country or track meet. Kids, I have to drag them to get on the bus after, the meet because they're so wanting to talk to their friends on other teams and how they did. It's just a wonderful camaraderie. And kids who leave soccer or other sports to come to cross country, there's just such a fine togetherness and bonding that kids have on track and cross country. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, and it's not something that is I don't think it's taught by the coaches. It's just the kids themselves, the runners sort of develop on their own, whether it's because they respect that other runner from the other high school or other college.
Exactly, respect,
And, you know, it's something that obviously we'd want in all of our sports for all of our kids. But there's something about cross-country or track and field that as they compete and they see that they're respected for their own efforts and for the other opponent's efforts, and it just sort of stays with them. Because, again, runners, as you well know, because you've been doing this, you know, once the benefits of running health-wise are so multiple that obviously people want to keep running right after their competitive careers in high school and college. They just want to keep running for the rest of their life. It's a wonderful, wonderful kind of situation because you know you're going to be involved with all these people who share your same passion, and they're all going to treat you with great kindness and civility.
Right, and there's numerous running clubs out there. There's numerous corporations throughout the United States where you running, they have running clubs. And kids' recreation, too. It's great to go to meet thousands of kids talking and about their meets, and it's great for kids' recreation track and cross country.
Well, Joel, again, I always thank you so much for taking the time to come on our show each year to talk about running and how great it is for so many millions of people. Friends, you can find Joel at his email, which is joelrun@AOL. His website is joel-run.com. Joel Pasternak, he is just a joy and knows this sport extremely well. Okay, thanks again, Joel.
And Nick. You're so welcome, and have a great day.
And we'll talk to you again next year. Okay, friends, that's going to do it for me in this edition of The Sports Edge. My thanks to Ed Arzuman. Stay tuned for the NFL preview, and I'll see you next week right here on Rick Wolf's Sports Edge.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.